President Trump hurling new accusations at Google as he steps up an attack on tech and social media companies. In a pair of tweets Tuesday, President Trump made unproven claims Google searches for, quote, Trump news are rigged to show only negative results that, quote, are suppressing voices of conservatives and hiding information and news that is good. Google's response, quote, we don't bias our results toward any political ideology, and we never rank search results to manipulate political sentiment.
Saudi Arabia's young crown prince Mohammed bin Salman spent 2 years laying the groundwork of a plan to sell $100 billion worth of shares in the kingdom's national oil company, Saudi Aramco. The sale would have represented just 5% of the company, a $2 trillion valuation, and could have been the largest initial public offering in history. The advisors told the king that taking Aramco public would not help the kingdom, but would undermine it.
Nestlé's $7.1 billion alliance with Starbucks has now been finalized. That allows it to exclusively sell the US firm's packaged coffees and teas around the world. The deal will give Starbucks a greater presence in China, Nestlé's second biggest market. As part of the tie-up, 500 Starbucks employees will also move to the Swiss firm. Starbucks says it will use the cash payment from Nestlé to increase planned stock buybacks over the next few years to $20 billion. The agreement also includes Starbucks-branded capsules for Nestlé's Nespresso and Dolce Gusto machines.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Wednesday. It's August the 29th, 5:11 in the morning. Here we are with another edition of The Opening Bell, another business day getting underway. Thanks for being with us this morning. We've got a good show for you this morning. Stay tuned for the full hour. A little bit later on, about 5:40 this morning, we're going to have a Purdue University senior who has created a classmate. It's called Classmate. It's an app that he hopes will better connect classmates at major universities right now at Purdue University. That's going to be in our second segment this morning. Ahead of Labor Day, we're also going to do a check-in on the state of organized labor. Bob Ryder will be here from the Chicago Federation of Labor. But first, let's begin on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk with futures pointing toward a flat open later on Wall Street. Dow futures up just 7 points this morning. NASDAQ and S&P futures barely moving as well. Around the globe, markets in Asia are generally higher, with the Nikkei, the Hang Seng, just about 0.25% higher. The Shanghai is a little lower. In Europe, markets are all in the red, with the FTSE off more than 0.5% in London. Markets in Germany and France are off just a couple of fractions as well. Oil is at $68.79 a barrel, which is up about 26 cents. A couple of stories before we begin this morning. Business headlines. The Canadian foreign minister says her meeting yesterday with the United States Trade Representative Robert Lighthizer was a very good, constructive conversation about how to revamp the North American Free Trade Agreement. She told reporters at the meeting that she and her team plan to work this week in a full steam effort, and said both parties will start diving into specific issues Wednesday, today. The deal still needs Canada to be a part of it, and it's unsure from statements yesterday by Mexican government officials whether a tentative agreement reached with the United States bilaterally will stand without Canada involved in this. And a place where they have real problems, evidence-based problems with Google in China today. More than a dozen human rights groups have sent a letter to Google urging the company not to censor internet searches in China. The joint letter calls on the CEO of the company to explain what Google is doing to safeguard users from Chinese government censorship and surveillance. That follows a letter earlier this month signed by more than 1,000 Google employees protesting the company's secretive plan to build a search engine that would comply with Chinese censorship. We begin front and center this morning with a check-in on labor unions. New research shows that the decline in labor unions has cut the pay for all workers across many industries. And we thought we'd bring in Bob Ryder this morning. He is the president of the Chicago Federation of Labor. Bob, good morning. Welcome to the Opening Bell.
Good morning, Steve. Thanks for having me.
Labor Day is always an important day to take stock in what labor unions have done for our country. Without labor unions, we wouldn't have a solid middle class in the country. I wanted to get your thoughts on the state of labor these days.
Well, it's interesting. All the rhetoric that you've heard over the years about labor and, you know, the quote-unquote decline of labor unions, I think you hit it right on the head. As people have seen the percentage of folks participating in the labor movement go down over the years, you've also seen this gross inequity in our country between what real people make and what people at the top are making. What I would say to you, though, is look at what we have here in Chicago. We have a strong labor movement. We have people that, you know, folks see out fighting every day. And, you know, the popularity of unions, especially here in our state, I think has never been higher. So whether folks are in a union or not, they believe in the necessity of labor unions.
Yeah, and the study that I was referring to was done by the University of Illinois. The professor who led the research showed that wages would have been 3 to 7% higher during their careers for most workers had U.S. labor unions still been as strong as they were, let's say, in the 70s, the 50s, or 60s, or 70s. 3 to 7%, that's a huge number when it comes to lost pay.
What's incredible to me is if you look at the type of society we live in a consumer-based society. In order for people to be consumers, they have to make more money, right? So if you want to have a vibrant economy, not just here, but all across this country, you know, and get away from this economy where everybody's living and borrowing on credit, you have to have a strong middle class. You have to raise wages. And I think it's got to be a society where people can actually buy the things that they make, that have the ability to buy the things that they make.
Bob, what is, if you could give us a sense of what happened starting, I guess, most experts say 1950 is when union membership started declining. Is there one or two things that you can point to that have caused this over the years?
Well, when we talk about this, we have to make sure that we put an asterisk next to it because we're talking about the national numbers of labor movement declining. You know, places like Chicago, Los Angeles, New York, we've always held the line. So the decline of our membership nationally has gone down more dramatically than it has locally. And I think that has to do with, you know, urban economies being different and also the proximity of people to one another and being able to hold a strong wall is more apparent. And a lot of what, you know, the question you're asking is starting in the late 1940s, they started to amend, you know, the labor statutes nationally in order to give the employer rights that were originally intended to just be for the workers, right? The National Labor Relations Act, which was passed in 1936, was a law sort of level the playing field to give people the power to have collective voice in the workplace. And that was because, you know, the robber barons of the late 1800s and the early 1900s, they ran the table on us. They did crazy things like apply antitrust laws against people organizing, you know, to raise their standards. And not just money, right? It's having a defined work day. It's having safety on the job. Well, they started to erode that in the late 1940s through the passage of this law called Taft-Hartley. And then from there, it became more acceptable for the employer to put people in rooms and have what we call captive audience meetings, saying, oh, you don't need a union. Oh, you know, why put someone in between you and me? And people that sat in those meetings, they understood what they were for, but the meetings were intended to have that effect of intimidation, right? To scare people away from the ballot box when it came time to vote. But if you look at what's going on in this country right now, and a lot of these states that are so-called right-to-work states, where unions have two hands tied behind their back where they have to represent people who are non-members in their bargaining units, which makes it harder to maintain membership, you're actually seeing a rise in union membership because organizing in those states is going up, and people's recognition that that in those states, which are generally low wage states, having that protection of a union is necessary.
Bob, hang on with us. We're going to continue our conversation this morning with Bob Ryder, who's on with us today from the Chicago Federation of Labor. He's the president of that organization. Bob, you've mentioned Chicago seems to be bucking the trend where union membership is concerned. What's going on here specifically that is helping with that? What's the secret sauce, if you will?
It's everything from having Bruce Rauner as governor, everyone seeing what it looks like when you have one guy at the top who is clearly fighting against collective action. But it's the, economic reality of our society, like I said earlier, of the gross inequity between the top and the bottom. And, just the culture and the fabric of Chicago. Chicago's the hometown of the American labor movement. Some of the biggest things in labor history have happened in Chicago. And one of the things that I've been saying a lot is we're still making history here every day. If you look back at the Chicago Teachers Union strike, there was a huge construction worker strike that happened here just within the last 8 years. They had window washers on strike. Now, I'm not saying that the solution to every problem is stopping work and putting up picket signs. But what I am saying is people here have a willingness to fight to make sure that they participate in the local economy. They're not afraid of being union members. I want to say it was 6 years ago, we started this campaign where we made these signs that say Proud Union Home. And it was just a real basic message. We didn't put the CFL logo on it. We trademarked the image so we could keep it going for years. And you drive anywhere in any of the neighborhoods of Chicago and the surrounding suburbs, you see these signs all over the place. I get phone calls and text messages from people all the time, like, "Oh, it was definitely in a union neighborhood this week because I saw your Proud Union Home signs up." It's just amazing, the mood around this city around what it means to be in the labor movement. I don't know if anyone else experiences it anywhere else in this country.
Bob, we've had, you mentioned Governor Rauner this year. We've had the Supreme Court ruling on public employee unions. But also we had Missouri voters voting to keep that state sort of in the pro-union category. What is the politics these days, not only nationally but locally, doing to impact labor unions?
Missouri is a perfect example. The Republicans in Missouri who fought to put a right to work law, which is an anti-work law, into place, they had to face the citizens' referendum. So it didn't electorally help Claire McCaskill, who was the Democrat running for re-election as U.S. Senator. They bumped the citizens' referendum up to a primary, and they did us. I want to say they did us a favor in doing that. Because if you look at the analytics, Democrats and Republicans, you had to identify as one or the other, both overwhelmingly voted against the implementation of this anti-union law. So what that tells you is that people from both parties, and independents didn't play a role in this, unless they decided to vote in a partisan election, which that means that they're not an independent anymore. Partisan folks voted for this. That tells me that the Democrats overwhelmingly support labor unions, but also that Republicans in the state of Missouri represent labor unions. That means there's a huge disconnect between people who are voting in an election and what their legislators are doing when they get sent to their state capitol.
You mentioned the robber barons from history earlier on in our conversation. We've talked a lot on this program about how even though the economy is doing so well and the job market is so tight right now, our wages don't seem to be going up like they should. That's probably different for if you're in a labor union where you can negotiate these things. But that sort of gives you a sense of even when the economy is good, workers don't get what they deserve most times.
Well, I was taking a ride with my dad the other day, and my dad was a heavy equipment operator with the operating engineers, Local 150, for over close to four decades. And as we were driving, through suburban Chicago, he looked at an area where he grew up and he saw all these warehouse buildings going up, right? And, you know, and our folks likely built them. But I said to my father, is the problem that we have, those aren't factories, that's all transportation logistical jobs, which is great, but that's the low-wage economy. So when people are talking about, you know, the unemployment rate's coming down, it's not coming down and then transferring into real wages for folks. We're just creating, you know, right now we're creating a whole new economy of service sector jobs where, you know, could they be good jobs? Absolutely. Are they good jobs yet? Not really.
Bob, we appreciate you being on with us today. Have a good Labor Day and come back soon.
Thanks, Steve. Thanks for having me on.
All right. Bob Ryder is the president of the Chicago Federation of Labor. You can find them online at chicagolabor.org. This is the opening bell on 720 WGN.
Hi, this is Jim Dahlke with today's Inno Minute on WGN Radio, a rundown of all the Chicago innovation and tech news you need to know, delivered by chicagoinno.com. Chicago Digital Design Program designation has been acquired by Flatiron School, a coding bootcamp WeWork acquired last year. Designation, a program that trains UI and UX designers, was founded in 2014 and has been bootstrapped since its launch. Chicago startup Javaya is using artificial intelligence to help match consumers with a perfect craft coffee. The startup created an online marketplace where consumers can be matched with and buy craft coffee from dozens of artisanal brands throughout the country and get it delivered directly to their door. And Sears is expanding its tire partnership with Amazon, allowing customers to now ship the tires they buy on Amazon directly to Sears stores for installation. It's a move by Sears to cozy up to the e-commerce giant at a time where many traditional retailers are being hurt by Amazon. That's today's Inno Minute from WGN Radio. Learn more at chicagoinno.com and sign up for The Beat, our daily email newsletter.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning again, everyone. Welcome back to the program. Thanks for being here with us on our Wednesday edition of The Opening Bell. Purdue University senior from LaGrange is trying to make it easier to connect with classmates and do better on education and interaction with fellow students. It is a new app, mobile platform called Classmate. And we're happy to have with us the CEO of this company, John Riccioni. John, good morning. Welcome to the Opening Bell.
Good morning, Steve. Thank you very much for having me.
Oh, you're very welcome. Congratulations on this. Give us a sense, give our listeners a sense of what this is all about.
Absolutely. So the main goal of Classmate arises from my experiences as a student. So I basically found myself a few years ago sitting in class. It was mid-semester, and people were setting their routines. You know, people were just listening to the professor, and they left without anybody really knowing that they were there. And so I got the idea of, you know, the current solution is these other apps where you have to create your own group and try to add everybody to that group and try to exchange contact info. And it's really inefficient, especially for Purdue classes, which most of the time is more than 50, maybe 100 students. So I thought of an idea to create an environment where students, there's no confusion on where to go. It would just be a collaborative environment where students can just log in and see their classes already there. And so I began teaching myself taught myself mobile programming in order to make this idea a reality. And so I'm sort of like a self-made coder. And so I created this idea. And through many hours and many years, I created a platform where students are able to participate and connect with their classmates.
And there's a cool idea. So when we pick up the app, and again, I think it's available on both Apple and Android for smartphone. It's free, again, called Classmate. What does the interface look like? What kind of things do we do? So you said you can go on there. You can already see your classes. It's easy to find peers. Give us a sense of what this looks like and how it functions.
Absolutely. So we just launched just at Purdue University for now, just to start. And as from the student's perspective, all they do is log in with their Purdue email. They see the full list of classes at Purdue. They choose the ones they're in for the semester, and they're automatically added to that group with everybody else in the class. There's no confusion on where to go or trying to get somebody's contact info. You're already in the group.
And so once you're in there, then you can have that conversation. You can create a chat, start a chat. And I'm guessing the idea here is to have sort of a little study session, or at least maybe organize one.
Absolutely. That's definitely correct. My view on building connections is that if you have more connections that you make while in college, it'll only benefit you both during college as well as after you graduate. If you have more connections, just from a logical standpoint, if you have more friends and you put out a question, you'll have a greater likelihood of getting a response back if you have more people that are able to give you that response.
Go ahead.
Yeah, so that's during college. As well as after college, if you maintain those connections, it can lead to countless opportunities.
Lots of opportunities in terms of like finding out what other people are doing in their job searches, maybe even hitting you up for a job since you're now the CEO of your own company.
Absolutely. You know, it kind of started from, I definitely see myself as an introvert. And so, trying to go up to somebody and trying to initiate that conversation can be kind of tough. But I didn't just base this company on how I felt. I interviewed other students to see if they actually had this problem. And my conclusion from that is that I found out that the biggest academic resource outside of the classroom for students is actually their friends. It's not the TAs or the teaching assistants or the professors. It's actually their friends that are in the dorm room right next to them that they could just drop by for a really quick question and make sure that they're on the right track. So I want to utilize that main resource and try to build as many connections as possible between students.
John, what was the testing like on this? I know you did sort of a beta test with one course at Purdue. What were the challenges in getting this up and running?
Right. So there were many challenges with trying to make this a reality. But this past spring, 2018, we did do a beta at one Purdue engineering class, and it went pretty well. It didn't go fantastic, but it was just a beta, and so it didn't have all the bells and whistles that I wanted it to have. It was just the minimum viable product that the main idea was to try to figure out if students were actually wanting to communicate with each other and if this actually provided an easier way to initiate those conversations. And it did. People were communicating, and I was thrilled to have actual students use the app. And as for the struggles, it was definitely a struggle, especially having to deal with managing this company and fixing bugs and things like that at the same time as taking classes. So I'm still a student this semester. We just launched this fall at Purdue for all classes, and but I'll be wrapping up graduating this December, and definitely excited to wrap things up here. But really looking towards the future in trying to connect students and trying to build those connections and initiate those conversations.
As I'm sitting here talking with you, and I bet our listeners are too, thinking back to the story of Facebook, that platform started with a college kid who decided he wanted to connect students in a better way. It's hard to not see the correlation there. What's the rooftop here? I mean, sky's the limit for you on this. You want to expand to other universities, but can you see this becoming potentially another social network?
I could possibly see that. I don't want to make too many comparisons with Facebook because I'm not trying to do I guess, another Facebook. I'm trying to be unique in the way that this is very focused on school and focused on trying to build those connections. But yeah, like you said, the sky is the limit. Right now, we're focused on just Purdue University classes, but eventually, we want to try to create it. I think the next steps, right now, people are just able to communicate within their own classes and create groups within their classes. But the next steps are to be able to connect everybody within the university, so having a message board with everybody involved, trying to have people post, you know, information about the university, what's going on around campus. But after that, once we get a handle on how students are feeling and able to connect at Purdue University, we want to eventually expand to other universities and try to connect students nationwide. And so I think, and it's not just the goal of trying to connect students within other universities, but how about connecting students between universities? So what if you have mechanical engineering department at Purdue University communicating with mechanical engineering at Georgia Tech? I think there's countless opportunities to be had, and I think this type of technology, having students just automatically be added to a group, is sort of inevitable. So I think if I don't do it, somebody else will. But I'm really excited that I'm getting a chance to put effort into this and start my own thing.
You're lucky there at Purdue to have the Purdue Foundry and the Purdue Research Foundation. The Purdue Foundry is sort of an accelerator right there on campus. How important was that in bringing all of this to fruition?
The Foundry was really important, actually. They have these two little cohorts or six-week sessions that I went through, and basically, what they teach you is how the basics of trying to start a company, trying to see if your idea is actually valued by others, by your customers, and trying to determine who those customers are, which is actually a really difficult thing. And they also taught us the second cohort was to try to interview your customers. And that was a bit paradoxical for me because since I'm a little introverted, to try to interview and just go up to random students to try to interview them, it was a bit counterintuitive. It was a bit difficult for me to try to initiate those conversations, but with the main goal of trying to create something that would make it easier to initiate conversations. So it was sort of a paradox in that way. And a lot of people told me, that the 30th interview was going to be like way easier than the first, but I found it didn't get easier over time for me. The 30th interview was, you know, just as difficult as the first one. So I don't know what to say about that, but definitely it was the Foundry has been a vital part in helping me start Classmate.
Well, John, all the best to you. Congratulations, I guess a little early congratulations on graduation, which I guess is coming up soon, hopefully. And we'll be watching the Classmate progress, and we'll love to have you back on to talk about how things are going. And all the best to you.
Thank you very much, Steve. Thanks so much for the congratulations and having me on.
All right, John Riccioni, the CEO of Classmate. John is a senior over at Purdue University from LaGrange. The app, again, is called Classmate, and it's available on Apple and Android smartphones.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, futures are pointing toward a flat open later on Wall Street. Dow futures have gone negative now, down about 9 points. NASDAQ and S&P futures are up just a fraction. Let's get the latest on agriculture and commodities now. Good morning, Orion Samuelson.
Well, good morning to you. And the big news this morning, of course, is opening day yesterday at the Farm Progress Show didn't go very well. They had to close the show by noon because of severe weather concerns and close the show for the afternoon. But I did talk to my TV crew in Boone, Iowa last night at 8 o'clock, and they tell me that the show will open this morning at 8 o'clock and be open for the full day. We're still looking at a little radar between here and there. We weren't able, of course, to fly Air Orion because of the weather along our flight path from here in Huntley out to Boone, Iowa, but I'll be leaving for the airport in about, well, as soon as I say goodbye to you, and it looks like we should be able to make it. They did have a good crowd for the early start to the show, but that dissipated quickly, and it was a problem. But they assure me that the Farm Progress Show is on today. Secretary of Agriculture Sonny Perdue scheduled to make an appearance there. Max Armstrong will be on stage in the hospitality tent at noontime and various other times. So we're looking forward to a lot of people coming out to see us today, since they had to close the show down yesterday. So let's keep our fingers crossed and hope the weather works, Steve.
Yeah, absolutely. So do they get to extend it by a day, or do you just lose out on a day there?
I'm afraid you lose out on a day, because when this show ends in a couple of weeks, all of the exhibitors have to be in Grand Island, Nebraska, set up and ready to go for the three-day Husker Harvest Days. So I doubt that we're going to see an extension of this show, but of course we will look into it as soon as we arrive, and we'll be sure to let folks know, because I would guess quite a few car radios right now are tuned to WGN to find out what's going on at Farm Progress Show. And so we'll keep people informed as well as we can today.
All right, Orion, safe travels, and we'll see you tomorrow on the show.
Okay, thanks.
All right, Orion Samuelson with us this morning. Now the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk Outlook for Wednesday, August the 29th. We'll get a look at mortgage applications from the Mortgage Bankers Association. Look at GDP as well today. Corporate profits report, pending home sales, the EIA petroleum status report. All of those things could move the markets today on Wednesday, August the 29th.